Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, along with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And today, we're going to continue our interview with Dr. Richard Furman about his new book, Prescription for Life. Before we jump into the interview, let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Furman. He spent over 30 years as a vascular surgeon in North Carolina, is a co-founder of World Medical Mission, the medical arm of Samaritan's Purse, and is now a member of the board of Samaritan's Purse. So, Dr. Dobson, take it from here.
Dr. Furman, let's start by talking about your book specifically. It's entitled Prescription for Life, and the subtitle says Three Simple Strategies to Live Younger, Longer. Can you deliver on that promise? Is it really possible to live a healthier, longer life by following simple strategies?
Well, it certainly is, or I would not have written that. I say that jokingly. But the prescription of life is about three lifestyles that we have control of. That's the foods that we eat, the weight, whether we exercise or not. Those are three things that we can control. And this is not my opinions, or this is not the way I would suggest you do things. This is a review of the medical literature. It's written in layman's terms. And I tell you, Jim, when I started this and as I read articles, a lot of them surprised me of what we can do. Women can help prevent breast cancer. We can help prevent Alzheimer's. We can help prevent dementia. We can help prevent a lot of cancers. And all of this comes with this lifestyle of what we eat, foods that we eat, whether we get to an ideal weight or not, and the exercise program. So it's just medical science. That's all it is. It's not anything else. So it'll work.
Well, I've gone a long way toward doing what you say here. But I want to tell you why it's so hard for me. I grew up in the South. Mm-hmm. You did too, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I was born in Louisiana and lived a lot in Texas and in Oklahoma and Arkansas before graduating from high school and going to California. In the South, you love to eat. I mean, go to a southern city and look around. Look at the men, particularly. That obesity is everywhere. Yeah. I mean, it's not everywhere, but it's awful.
Oh, yeah.
It's an awful lot. And the reason is because there's an emotional attachment to food. In my family, every good thing in life that happened was associated with food.
With eating, yeah.
You get an A, then your mom fixed your favorite food. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad would come home. He was an evangelist. He would come home, and my mother would have all this great food for us, and pies and cakes and things of that nature.
Right.
I mean, they really meant an awful lot to me.
I know exactly what you're saying.
And so it was not just not eating the food. It was disassociating myself with things that brought happy memories to me.
Right.
I know I'm not the only one that has had that problem. It wasn't until I had the heart attack that I had to say, wait a minute, this isn't working. But it was very, very difficult for me.
Mm-hmm.
Your subtitle says Three Simple Strategies to Live Younger, Longer.
Yeah.
Simple difficult.
Yes.
Three simple but difficult strategies to live younger, longer lives.
Well, that, it says they're simple strategies, and that part of it is the truth. It is difficult, but as I've said before, what you said about when you had your heart attack puts everything you all have just mentioned in a different category.
Mm-hmm.
Because once that happened, you changed. You changed your eating habits. You still loved your children. You still met with them. You still had dinners with them. But the problem is that you don't have to wait until you have a heart attack before you realize all of this. And that's why I wrote this. Because there's 85% of everybody over the age of 50 have significant blockage of their arteries in their heart.
That's scary.
I know it is. Yikes. Without having any symptoms. And two-thirds of the time, your first symptom is a full-blown heart attack. So all of these things you all are saying is true. Hey, I grew up, my favorite food is red meat and cheese until I started reading about what it does. And after you read Prescription for Life and after you see what it's going to do to your children down the road, you're going to look at it, well, if I really love them, I'm going to use olive oil instead of all this butter and all that.
I'm a wiser grandmother than I was mother, and the last time my granddaughter came, I fed her kale and black beans for breakfast, and she actually ate them. because you're absolutely right. I thought, wait a minute, I don't want to start giving her cookies and things like this. And so I applaud my daughter for wanting to give her daughter healthier things, but you're absolutely right. But it's just a change in the mindset. But I think it's important to kind of uncover why we eat what we eat, so that we can really deal with the reasons we eat what we eat. And then I think we can really begin to change our eating habits, because I really believe anybody can change them. But we have to know why we do what we do.
Right. Well, eating is an addiction. You have to deal with that desire. You have to beat the desire before you're ever going to be able to control your eating. As long as you still desire something, it's going to be difficult to control it.
You also then go on to talk about reaching your ideal weight. And I think that this is important, and the steps that we need to do to reach our ideal weight. Do you talk about an actual number, or do you do the BMIs, or how do you suggest people figure out what their ideal weight should be?
Okay, I have put that on the prescriptionforlife.com, which explains all of that. But you look in the turn sideways and look in the mirror, you can tell that you're not at your ideal weight. So only less than 12% of Americans are at ideal weight. So
you're one of them, by the way.
Yeah.
I get angry when I look at you.
But the thing is don't dwell on what your ideal weight is. We know when we're not at our ideal weight and get to work on it.
Dr. Furman, you have said in your book, Prescription for Life, and the subtitle particularly says, Three Simple Strategies to Live Younger, Longer. Now, I heard you say when we were not on the air that these dietary rules or understandings that you've given us also play a role in the development of cancer or the prevention of cancer.
Right.
And many people don't know that.
Well, many people don't know, and I didn't realize it until I was focusing in on heart attack and strokes. But all of a sudden, I started reading about cancer, especially breast cancer and colon cancer, and these same three lifestyles that we've been working on to prevent disease of the arteries. Those same three lifestyles play a huge role in cancer. It can prevent one-third of all cancers. It can prevent 38% of breast cancers and 42% of colon cancers. Now, the breast cancer is what I feel like that we as physicians, the medical community, has let women down by not pointing out things that they can do to prevent breast cancer. Weight is probably the one biggest factor that women don't realize, that it's easy to gain 2 pounds a year and not even know it. There's a good report that shows that women who gained 55 pounds from the age of 18 until menopause, and that's about 2 pounds a year, are 45% more likely to have breast cancer. And then other reports show the other side of that coin, that if women would lose 5 to 10% of their weight, of their body weight, they can prevent 25 to 50% of their breast cancer. So that is important to know, that there's that significant just with these lifestyles. Exercise is the same way. They have a report that women who have a family history of breast cancer, which, as you know, means you're more likely to get it than not. But those women had a fourth less chance of getting breast cancer if they exercised. So these lifestyles are important to help prevent the worst cancer that they're going to get in the breast cancer.
You didn't write this book just to inform the public of an area of your expertise. You wrote it because you care about people.
Right.
And there's a spiritual dimension to that. You wrote it because you wanted people to be able to be useful to the Lord for a longer period of time.
You hit it on the head. That's right. Mm. And that's why I said I had that discussion with David Jeremiah, who wrote the foreword, that he can work for the Lord many extra years if he would follow this. And he's following it, and that's why he wrote the foreword to explain that. Our body is the most prized possession we have. Why wouldn't we take care of it?
Temple of the Lord.
Yeah.
Right.
You say in the book, I think we touched on this last time, but that it's important to eat the right foods, and then you listed them. Fiber, mm-hmm. fruit, vegetables, mm-hmm. leafy greens, pasta, grilled fish or chicken.
Yeah.
Now, the only carbohydrates in there are pasta. I mean, bread. I mean, corn. I mean, potatoes, starches.
Yeah, all of those are fine. Those are fine. And as I point in there, you will set yourself a breakfast, you'll set yourself a lunch, and then you set yourself a dinner platform, and then you'll start adding to it. And there are many things, as you will read, there are many things you can add to it. What we're focusing on, the main thrust, are the saturated fats that cause those splinters, the LDL splinters. Zero in on that.
I've been a label reader for 24 years.
Yeah.
I won't pick up anything that I don't look at the backside and see what's in it.
Right.
I talked about bread. The scripture says man does not live by bread alone. And I wish that the writer had said, but he does live by bread a little bit. I love bread.
I do not rule out bread because that's not the saturated fat that we're talking about. There's a lot of
So you can
food.
Eat healthy breads.
You can. Whole grain. That's where you get back to get that fiber. You eat the whole grain bread, whole grain pasta, potatoes, vegetables, what? You're okay.
You talk about heart disease and high cholesterol. Can you talk a minute about dementia? You know, we don't really know what causes dementia, but what link do you cite for, you know, high fat diet and a poor diet and dementia?
Okay, that is an excellent question. The Journal of the American Medical Association had the best article, I think, that I read on it because it went to the extremes. It had several thousand people that they followed for 14 years. Mm-hmm. And here's what they found. They divided them up in groups. The ones who ate, as we described, the red meat and the dairy products, the cheese, and all of that, the ones that ate the most of that versus the ones that ate just like Dr. Dobson just mentioned, the fruits and the vegetables and the pasta, the fish, that diet, there was a 40% less likelihood of developing Alzheimer's with those who ate the same diet that we go over with.
That'll get you.
Now, wait a minute. I'm not through
yet. Yes.
But now listen to this. The exercise out of that group of people, they took the ones who exercised the most versus the couch potato. And the ones that exercised the most had a 48% less likelihood of getting Alzheimer's.
Wow.
Now, there's even a better part of this report, that the ones in that group, there were some of them that did both, that ate the right foods and exercised, and they had a 60% less likelihood of getting Alzheimer's. Now, those were using extremes on, you know, the most and the least, but it gives us a good indication that there are things we can be doing that will help prevent Alzheimer's. To me, that the biggest issue.
That's very compelling.
Yeah.
Dr. Furman, I had a conversation with my cardiologist fairly recently, who quoted a study to me. I wonder if you referenced it in here or if you have heard it or comment on it, that a study was done between those who ate a low-fat, wise, typical diet that patients who've had a heart attack are given. I was one of them. The other is a Mediterranean diet, which has a lot of fish, a lot of tomato-based sauces, olive oil, and bread that doesn't have saturated fat in it. And of the two, the Mediterranean diet had fewer deaths. Have you read that study?
I've read. There are numerous articles on the Mediterranean diet, and that is, of all the groups of diets, that is the best one. Prescription for Life is closer to the Mediterranean diet. There's some changes, but it's closer than any of the others. But it's reports like that that make you realize, I don't want to eat such and such. I don't want to eat this steak. I want to eat salmon. I don't want to eat all this cheese. I'm not going to use butter. I'm going to use olive oil or canola oil in my cooking. It gives you, there's a lot of little things that seem little, but they're big. And there's numbers that point out just what you're saying is true.
I am very, very addicted, your word, very addicted to carbohydrates, though. And I'm telling you, nobody believes this, but I have to have them because I don't feel good if I don't get them. You want to argue with that?
Well, I don't think arguing is the word. I explained it in Prescription for Life about that you realize what it's doing. Then it gets easier and easier.
Well, if you keep your weight down, what's the problem?
Okay, no, carbohydrate. I'm not talking about carbohydrates. I'm talking about the carbohydrates that have a nice glaze on the outside of them that have the sat. That's where the fat.
Sure.
No, I'm not talking about carbohydrates. I'm talking about what goes on the carbohydrates. I'm talking about the chocolate chips that they put in the carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And that's why I say just look at the label, see what the saturated fat is, and then it clicks in your mind, hey, that's going to cause such and such. I don't want such and such.
But the carbohydrates themselves.
No.
But there are a lot of people that think that way.
Right.
Yeah, if you're on an extreme, like if you're getting into diabetes and things like that, that's a little different outlook.
Dr. Furman, before we came into the studio today, I showed you the results of my 2.5-hour physical exam that I had yesterday.
Right.
Especially the metabolic panel that showed the results as related to different electrolytes, sodium, potassium, and so on.
Right.
And it relates to, you said, my level of exercise. But explain what you saw. I don't want to get too personal here.
No, well, reading your report, I just half jokingly but half truthfully saying that you're probably in the above 99th percentile of being in great health. And I'm going to ask you again, how much have you exercised?
I started in 1993, December 13th of 1993, and I have exercised every day for 21 years, except when I was sick or when I had a stroke. I was in the hospital. I missed 3 days of exercise there, and I try never to miss. I do not allow myself any leeway. I work out 45 minutes a day on a treadmill. And now I've kind of eased up a little bit, and I may miss 15 or 20 days a year, but not if I don't have to.
Okay, and what I told you when you were telling me about the exercise is that you probably don't realize with your family history of your father dying of a heart attack just all of a sudden, your grandfather having a heart attack or stroke, that it's in your family, that probably the
five uncles,
that is probably the one factor that has kept you going allowing you to do what you're doing has been your exercise program. And that day that you decided, that was a moment in time where you decided you were going to exercise, and you have ever since then. That has kept you going more than anything you can ever imagine, because, like I'm saying, these three lifestyle factors are all intertwined, and your exercise has made you what you are now, and you're able to continue your platform, and I just congratulate you. I was shocked to hear why you're in such good shape and why your report's so good. And that moment in time, I just hope this program is one of those moments in time that people are listening that say, hey, James Dobson did that. I'm going to start that.
I can do that.
And you look back, and hopefully many years down the road, they can look back and say, that was that moment.
The title of the book that we've been discussing, Prescription for Life, Three Simple Strategies to Live Younger, Longer, by Dr. Richard Furman, who is a vascular surgeon and a distinguished doctor. This book is loaded with information. We've only touched a portion of it. And this is a book that I think our listeners are going to want to read, not only for themselves, but their spouses and for their children and grandchildren. And I appreciate Dr. Furman, you writing this book and basing it not on your opinions, but on data, on medical research, and the findings of science.
Thank you for that. I would like to add here at the end one little statement about the very end of the book. It's called The Afterword. And this is one of the main reasons I wrote the
book.
That's
called dessert, isn't it? Is that not what you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about inviting the reader into my examining room when I'm dealing with the patient that's had cancer. Everyone who has cancer thinks about eternity. And I made it a practice in my practice to ask every cancer patient, would you like to discuss eternity? They all said yes. And I go into... the reader goes through, and this may be a non-believer or whatever, but I go through the steps of, if that door is the door to heaven and you knock on it right now and they open it, what can you say that will make them let you in? 80% of them say, well, I hope I've done more good than I have bad. Then I'm able to explain John 14:6, that's not what Jesus said. He said he's the only way in. And I'd give them a Bible, and I'd have that verse underlined and go through it with them. But that's at the very end of the book, and that was one of the main reasons of getting the people's attention, building their respect about the medical literature, and then letting them understand that we're all going to die someday, and then what happens.
Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that, because many physicians feel like they don't have the right to raise that question. But if your patient grants you the right, you do.
I always ask them.
I saw my physician yesterday. You and I talked about that before the program started. And he took my hand. We shook hands. And he prayed with me. And I can't tell you what that meant to me. Prayed for me not only physically, but emotionally. Prayed for Shirley. He knows. And I think most people would want to have a physician who understood the spiritual dimension of life and was not afraid to broach the subject.
Yeah. Well, like you said, I asked them, but 100% said yes. They're thinking about, hey, what if I die? Everybody's told that they have cancer. What's going to happen? They all wonder what's going to happen.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much, Dr. Furman, and of course, Dr. Meeker, for this conversation. I am sure that this has been fascinating and very helpful to many, many people. I hope you sell a million copies and they can find it in any bookstore, can't they?
Everyone that sold, all of the proceeds go to World Medical Mission, to these post-residents like Kent Brantley that's telling you about. They need houses over there. They need the hospitals worked on. So anyway,
you're really serious about doing the Lord's work, aren't you?
That I am.
It shows in your eyes. Thank you, sir. And I hope our listeners have enjoyed this conversation. And Dr. Meeker, take the program off and tell folks how they can get a copy here from our colleagues. And I don't know what else, but you do, Dr. Meeker.
Okay.
Thank you.
Dr. Furman, thank you so much for being with us. If you would like more information about Dr. Richard Furman or Samaritan's Purse, please visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.